Tom, Dan, welcome to Full Story.
Thanks for having us, Noor.
Thanks, Noor.
Thanks for joining us to chat about the year that was, and we'll also be looking ahead to what Australian politics may have in store in 2026. The lower house has risen. The Prime Minister is on his honeymoon. Coverage of his wedding went global. I take it few from the press gallery were invited.
I'm not sure any from the press gallery were invited, except an official photographer.
It was a tightly held secret. When did you learn that the wedding was underway at the lodge?
There was speculation during the week leading up to Saturday that it could have been this weekend just gone.
Mm.
The Prime Minister's office told us that they would give us some information when the time was right, but they were reluctant to confirm anything. But there were a couple of text messages on Saturday morning, and one person in the know told me to make sure that I hadn't gone out on Saturday night too early.
Yeah.
So Saturday afternoon, I knew for sure that we were on.
Dan, you don't want to jump in here.
No, I got a text message as well asking if I was on wedding duties, and mercifully I was not. It was Tom's responsibility. But no, congratulations to the Prime Minister and to Jodie.
It looked like a great event. I thought all power to them. Lovely to have a lodge wedding so historic. It looked like a fantastic occasion.
All right. Let's move on to the politics. The government ended the year with a legislative win, striking a deal with the Greens to pass environmental laws that it promised at not one but two elections. Were you surprised they got it across the line before Christmas as they'd wanted to?
Having covered it in depth for months and months, in the end, I wasn't surprised. And the reason I wasn't surprised was because just how determined Anthony Albanese was to get these bills through. So the government obviously doesn't have the numbers in the Senate. They can't just decide to pass legislation. But in being so forward in wanting to pass it, and really, you know, Murray Watt, the environment minister, from probably a fortnight out, was not using words like could pass, hope pass, might pass. He was saying will pass. And what that did was gave a very strong signal to both the Greens and the coalition, the two negotiating partners, that the government was up for a deal. They were prepared to give significant ground. And in some ways, they weakened their negotiating position because they just were adamant it's getting through. So it took a long time, right up until so Parliament's final sitting day was on Thursday of last week, right up until very, very, very late on Wednesday night, and even on Thursday morning, it hadn't yet been sealed. But the government got there in the end, doing a deal with the Greens, and I think they will look back and think that was the right decision in terms of where the legislation ultimately landed.
Mm. What do you think it tells us about the Greens' approach under the leadership of Larissa Waters? Is this an indication of what the remainder of this term of Parliament may look like?
It's an interesting point, and it's certainly something that there's been a lot of commentary since that legislation passed. We obviously knew the way that Labor attempted to characterise the Greens in the previous term under Adam Bandt as being really obstinate, as being blockers, as being part of this no-elition with the coalition. Anthony Albanese, when he was in the chamber on the Friday doing the sort of victory lap about the legislation, used the phrase working with the Greens was actually the yes-elition. You know, the Greens had made a decision not to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Now, is this going to be a template for how the Greens go moving forward? Now, lots of people on the Labor side who were close to negotiations on this, people even in the environment movement, were very clear that the Greens were quite pragmatic throughout these negotiations. They pushed extremely hard. There is nothing more important for that party than be able to do things to strengthen environment laws or to take action on climate change. So I do think there was an element of pragmatism, but they also recognised that there was the opportunity to do a deal now, that they needed, that there was that opportunity might not exist in 6 months' time. So I think there was a degree of pragmatism. The offer that came from Labor was incredibly strong. Ultimately, it was something that certainly wasn't on the table 12 months ago. So I think there are a combination of factors that made it work in this instance. Is that going to be the template moving forward? I think it's hard to say. I think there's probably been electoral benefit, and I suppose we'll see in time, electoral benefit for both Labor and the Greens out of this. But whether it applies to other areas. There's going to be continual debate about housing, for instance. We're going to have a debate about negative gearing and capital gains tax over the course of the term. Whether the Greens adopt a slightly different position, I don't know. But in this instance, it's given an insight into when the two parties work together, there is potential benefits for both.
And some points in that I want to pick up on. But first, I'd like to zoom out. Commentators have remarked that it has been a positive year for the Prime Minister and for the government, particularly when compared to the chaos in the coalition. How would you describe it?
Oh, it's a historic great year for the Prime Minister. There's no question about it. For the Labor movement, for this Prime Minister in particular, a landslide win 6 months ago and solid, although workmanlike governing in the 6 months since, I think they're finishing the year in a very strong position, made all the stronger by the fact that the opposite side seems to be going further into its own chaos rather than getting its act together to try and emerge stronger.
It's interesting to see the way that Labor has sought to capitalise on the dysfunction on the coalition side. It's not been to try and really push the envelope and race ahead with progressive reform. It's really to continue the phrase that Tom used, workmanlike. And it says a little bit about Anthony Albanese's approach generally, that if you kind of bed things down in this stage, let the coalition be dysfunctional, but don't let Labor change its approach. And they can, through that kind of style, hopefully achieve his goal that he's repeated over and over of turning Labor into the kind of status quo government, the natural party of government.
Could that steady as she goes approach backfire?
Yeah, I mean, there's already conversations within Labor and within the broader Labor movement that this approach of methodical, cautious government might be good in the moment, but they could get to the end of what looks like it could be a medium to long-term government without a major set of reforms, set of policies on which to build a legacy and hang their hat on. I think it's too soon to tell how that will play out. I think also the position that the government has in the lower house now, giving it some buffer against the coalition even going into the next election, is good conditions for bigger thinking and for doing some of the heavy lifting that Labor usually say that they're up for when they're in government. I think the legacy question is in the front of mind for some of these ministers, certainly for the Prime Minister. So I think the conditions are good. It's just going to take the ambition and the kind of risk that he sometimes is reluctant to show.
Mm. Yeah, and I think in terms of the risks to Labor of inaction, we talk about the 94 seats that they won and this thumping victory they had at the election. But, I mean, it's been said by others that Labor's support is a mile wide but an inch deep, that their primary vote is still very low. They are still vulnerable. And we saw that at the 2022 election, this new force of teal independents rise up and really capitalise on what was a vacuum on the Liberal side. And it'll be interesting to see whether we see something similar at the 2028 election, whether there are kind of independents that challenge en masse. We saw a couple of them at the May election. But I think whenever we talk about Labor's standing, their supremacy in the parliament, we have to remember that their support is still on the precipice of their primary vote at the moment. If you had that 15, 20 years ago, you would have been in almost a disastrous position. So it's really important to keep in our mind as we sort of analyse the way that Labor is assessing their situation.
Some have remarked that the second year of a second term is the moment to pursue ambitious reform. And that was a point that, Tom, I know you spoke to Sean Kelly about on the Guardian's Australian Politics podcast, and he explores that in his quarterly essay. I wonder what your take is on that as two reporters who have watched Albanese transition from opposition to government, whether you get the sense that there is an appetite to embark on some of that progressive reform in 2026.
If there's one thing that gets the Prime Minister's goat up, it's these kinds of questions. He says that the government is already ambitious and delivering on reforms. I think one area that there's clearly reform happening is in emissions reduction and the renewable transition. Heavy, difficult work, going to take years to implement. The question mark remains over whether they'll be able to achieve their targets. And we see the early stages of things developing, like on universal childcare, which is something the Prime Minister has said he wants to be a legacy of this government. So, yeah, I think this is the time to be doing that work. I'm not sure, as Dan notes, you know, we should be careful about assuming that the supremacy continues forever. I'm not sure if they're as buffeted as we might think. 3-year terms are very short. Mm-hmm. And politics is swinging around a lot internationally. Just look at the trouble that Keir Starmer is in the UK. Things can go bad pretty quickly.
The May election does feel like a lifetime ago, and that campaign focused on cost of living. We know that inflation has ticked up to 3.8%, housing being a key contributor to that. How big a challenge will this remain into the new year? And do you get the sense that the government is still cognizant of just how difficult people are finding life at the moment financially?
Yeah, I think they are cognizant, and you could have accused them of at various points in the first term taking their eye off the ball. I don't think they're making the same mistake now, because you think about all of the different components of their agenda really has an element of cost of living relief in it, whether it was the HECS debt relief, whether it was things around bulk billing. So I think it is front of mind, and it's almost kind of like a condition of all of the policies that they put forward. And I'm sure Anthony Albanese puts this condition on, said, I need an element of cost of living relief in all of them. But it is going to continue to bite. I think there was a sense, whilst the government didn't take their eye off the ball, that they had got through the worst of it. That was the language that Jim Chalmers was using. He was never kind of so confident as to say mission accomplished, but the language was sort of skirting around there. Inflation is on the rise. And I think what that will do as we head into next year, and this might feed into the discussion we have, is refocus the debate around some of these bigger type reforms. So you think about the cost of living relief that they have put out there. I mentioned HECS, but other things like energy rebates or top up tax cuts. Again, Anthony Albanese would hate us saying this, but they're minor stuff. They're not massive structural changes. Mm. So I suspect that if inflation persists at its level that it is, if we get into kind of the middle of next year, there's going to be that increasing appetite. Let's have a big debate. Let's do stuff that is fundamental. Let's talk about tax reform. Let's talk about capital gains and negative gearing. Now, whether Albanese moves on any of these things, I don't know. But what the inflation does is it feeds into these debates around when are you actually going to genuinely tackle the problem in ways other than the short-term solutions.
And we are starting to get a bit of a sense of that. I know that the former frontbencher Ed Husic has spoken to the Sydney Morning Herald. He's suggested that the government lacks ambition and that too many in the caucus are afraid to speak. And on one of those, one key issue that was in the news last week was gambling reform. Has the government been able to properly explain why it's not pursuing the reforms that were recommended by the late Peter Murphy? And will this go away?
Taking those in reverse order, no, it won't go away. And no, they have not been able to explain it. The Prime Minister gets a little bit tetchy when he's asked about this, and there have been questions at press conferences and in Parliament. He says that the government is doing a lot on gambling harm, but so far the response to the Murphy review and a broader package of changes have not been forthcoming. The government is of the view that traditional media outlets are reliant on some of the revenue that comes from this advertising, and that, you know, the kind of outward-looking sense is that they're trying to avoid picking fights with cashed-up opponents in the gambling lobby and in the media companies. I think they are going to have to do something in this space. There's clearly appetite in the caucus and certainly in the community. And if there is one area where the Prime Minister's response seems a bit out of step with the caucus and with the public more broadly, I think it might be this.
We'll be right back.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry.
They say a day is a long time in politics. We've been away a couple of months, so a lot's happened in that time.
We had Spillvember. The Liberal Party found new ways to fail.
The government got its nature law through.
Barnaby kept on making about it himself. And the big story, the One Nation vote has doubled since the election.
So we're back. Two more episodes of Back to Back Barry's, the podcast.
That's a lot of backs.
Well, it is a lot of backs, but it's done now. Two special episodes before we come back next year. So that's this Saturday and next.
With a special guest on Saturday the 13th of December.
Have a look for us in the full story feed.